You've managed. No, you've done it, Chad. You've screwed it up.
We're good to go. Good evening. Good morning, everybody. Whenever you listen to this, I'm Chad Sherwood, your host here at HoopsHD.com. And we've got a really special show for you tonight. Again, I'm Chad Sherwood. I'm sitting next
to you. You said that already, Chad.
Is David Griggs, making a ton of noise already. John Tytel joining us. And right below me on my screen, at least, Brian Black joining us, special guest. Brian, how... Brian is, you can follow him on Twitter at 350 Jerseys for Hope. That's the number four in there. He's in the process of collecting every single Division I school's jersey in his campaign to fight epilepsy. And it's a real great cause there also. Brian, how are you doing? And thanks for joining us tonight.
I'm doing excellent. And thank you guys for having me. It's an honor.
and you wore the absolute appropriate jersey for tonight.
Of course. Yeah,
there we go. My team there, Rutgers, mm-hmm. and our storied NCAA tournament history.
but like we say, you've got more wins than Rutgers, or not than Nebraska. So Rutgers has more wins than Nebraska in NCAA tournament.
Well, that,
I think Nebraska's like
0-6. Well, Nebraska pre Tim Miles. I mean,
Nebraska.
That's one of the things. Yeah.
Brian, you're actually in Oregon and you're an Oregon grad, correct?
I am an Oregon alum, correct. Right. Yep, I'm at DEC.
And we've got John Tytel next to you there, who is kind of your arch rival there over in Arizona.
I know. See the Wildcats? Is that what you're that's the one, right?
Yeah. Bear down, you better believe it.
That's right.
And Batch, you've been the top two teams in the Pac-12 last year, and probably heading this year as well.
I would say that, and we do have the Trojans and the UCLA, so it's going to be kind of a battle. I think USC is actually going to be really good, and a lot better than people are maybe giving credit for. Andy Enfield he's going to do some good things for them. He already is, but yeah, he's going to really make strides with them this year.
Yeah, I was going to say he already has. He's taken them from being absolutely atrocious to making them tournament regulars.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What he did with Florida Gulf Coast, you know, turned Dunk City into that. Getting a 15 seed to the Sweet 16. I mean, that's pretty impressive. So I would assume that, you know, he could do some great things with USC. And, you know, the games we've had against them have been close. So I think this year they're gonna really push the other three in the conference.
Yeah. Well, Brian, let's talk a little bit about your campaign here, actually, to collect all these jerseys, and you've gone for fight epilepsy. I know that you do suffer from it. How are you doing, first of all? How are things going health wise for you?
Things are going okay. This time of year, I do sometimes have a few more epileptic episodes than others, but I write them down, and once I get to around November or so, they calm down. So. Right now I'm okay though. It's just one day at a time. It was really awesome. A couple of days ago we had that eclipse come over, so that was kind of a really cool moment. And I asked people which jersey I should have worn during that. So things are going good right now though. I've got some more appointments lined up later this year with a neurologist, and we're going to talk about what surgery probably makes the most sense to do later this year or early next year.
Yeah, I'd actually seen that on your Twitter feed that you were talking about having surgery coming up sometime the end of this year, and we do really wish you the best with all of
Absolutely.
That. Yeah. I guess, where did this idea come from to collect all these jerseys? What spawned this?
I had seen a couple other collections that some folks on Reddit, some Reddit users had, and they were pretty impressive. Some of them they'd amassed over, you know, at least 4 years. And so the jerseys that person had, a lot of them were older than the ones that they had just been able to find on eBay. And so I kind of thought to myself, well, why not reach out to every single school and kind of tell them my story and be able to in turn talk to people about, you know, not only what I'm dealing with, but what 1 in 26 folks all over the world deal with epilepsy. So that was my big thing, is just reaching out to them and letting them know that, you know, there was a way that I could, you know, show people what these schools do and the people they send on to medical careers to help save the lives of of folks that deal with epilepsy. So it seemed like it went hand in hand perfectly with my love of college basketball. My dream was to one day be able to drive to all the campuses and buy a jersey. And of course, I didn't think about the fact that you can't just drive to Siena and get a basketball jersey from there. So,
yeah, there's some schools that I don't even know that you could buy a jersey at all from.
Right, exactly.
I've been to a few of them to games. you should see it. Well, they're opening a new building this year, but NJIT's building was a piece of work when I went up there.
Oh yeah, New Jersey Tech. It was Brian Kennedy. He sent me the Coach Kennedy sent me their jersey, so that was really awesome.
Yeah,
and you're up to. I just saw you just got another. Being a Jersey guy myself, you just got a Jersey, a Monmouth jersey today, which made it up to 183. Is that correct?
183. That's right. Funny thing about Monmouth jerseys, I live in the town called Monmouth, and so when I got that, some of my family and friends just kind of got a chuckle out of that. Like, I live in a town with a D2 program, Western Oregon University. So they kind of laugh at the fact that Western Oregon hasn't sent me a jersey, but Monmouth University all the way across the country.
Well, so you're up to 183 of them now. Let me throw this up. Maybe I throw this question over to David and he could ask this. I think, do we need to start taking bets on who's going to be the very last one? What schools are hold off?
Right. I mean, the one thing I do kind of that concerns me is the one of the schools or one of the leagues hasn't. I haven't received any jerseys from them. SWAC, Southwestern Athletic Conference. I worry about the financial stability of those institutions. I've received four from the MEAC, but those are the two leagues that I feel like are going to probably have the most trouble. Just because of their situations. I may be wrong about that. Who knows? But
I feel surprised.
Like Texas may be one of the last ones. I could see that being something. So you never know.
I was going to think it would be Duke, but.
Yeah, well, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, you know. I do have Louisville, but it's one of their older AAC jerseys. But yeah, there's several in my head. They're going to think, well, they're probably going to be one of the last ones to come in once they kind of see how big this has gotten.
Yeah. So, Brent, when you reach out to them, I guess, like, what is – do you have a similar approach that you take to all of them, or do you come at everyone differently? Or, like, how do you go about – you mentioned reaching out to the schools and sharing your story. Just in general, when you approach a school, how does that work?
What I did is I just went to the websites for the athletic directories of every single one of the D1 schools. And so I just went down the list and said, okay, here's the athletic director, here's the coaching staff. And I wrote an individualized letter out to every single one of them, basically just saying, you know, this is what, you know, I deal with. And I've wanted to be able to show my love for this sport because, you know, through the years, folks have thought I'm kind of like a savant with knowing where, you know, all the teams and the schools are and such and the leagues they play in. And so I felt like, you know, why not just reach out to each one of the schools and kind of send them an individualized sort of email saying, I would want to live, you know, or I would love to come to one of your games, you know, wherever you're at and be able to experience that. Like, for example, Stetson University. I went, let's go and catch a game at DeLand, Florida one time. You know, go on down there. And so reaching out to those schools kind of, I felt like kind of gave them a little bit more of a connection. And again, I felt like the smaller money schools were almost more important to reach out to before on the bigger money schools, because that is going to show people like what my true passion is, because I don't care, you know, only about North Carolina or Syracuse or Arizona. I, you know, also really enjoy the conference races in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference or the Horizon League, what have you. And the conference tournaments there are so exciting to me. And so I felt like reaching out to each one of the schools and kind of just talking to them, telling them my story and help telling them how it would be possible to raise up awareness for epilepsy together through this.
Well, yeah, then those smaller schools are something that are really near and dear to our hearts here at Hoop Safety.
Absolutely.
Also. And I mean, we've been known to sit there and watch, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning watching, you know, Metro Atlantic games and MEAC games or whatever we could catch. But
that's right.
Right, because one of the podcasts we do each week throughout the season, so from November on, is called Under the Radar, and it is what it sounds like. It's the 22 traditional one-bid leagues, and we spend half hour each week focusing on that. And, you know, so that's kind of fun. But, yeah, we're in the same boat in that regard. And what's interesting about that is that those, like you said, those typically are more approachable. Like, our response from that group has been probably bigger than the power conferences.
Of course. That a lot of times I feel like those schools, I mean, they welcome the publicity and the attention that they can get from folks that really are diehards like us.
Right, yeah.
For example, like Stetson or Kennesaw State, you know, those schools are like, wow, like somebody's really reaching out to us from across the country. And that would catch my eye too, absolutely.
Let me throw it over to Tytel. You've got a few questions also you want to discuss, a few things you want to discuss.
I've got a million questions, but I'll try to get to the point. So, you mentioned Arizona, which I'm a huge fan of, obviously, as a loyal alum. If I had a supermodel show up to my front door wearing nothing but an ASU jersey, I assure you she'd be leaving in that ASU jersey. Is there any school's jersey that you refuse to put on your own body because you are such a fan of their hated rival or something like that?
Let me show you again real quick. Here's my Pac-12 section. I've got it organized by league here. Here's the rack of all of them. So here's the Beavers one. And I have put this one on, but
why?
it does feel weird, a little weird. I haven't gotten one from the doggies up north.
I was going to say, like, in basketball, Oregon State is generally so pathetic that Washington might be the more heated one. Well, I don't know. But maybe
Washington, it was kind of nice because last year, you know, we were first place. The Ducks were first place. And then bookended that with Washington and Oregon State at the bottom. It's actually great. It couldn't have been better. So, you know, the only thing that may have been a little better is if Washington was last and Oregon State was second last. But, you know, the interchangeability of those is great for Duck fans. Good problem to have.
Yeah. And are the Ducks heartbroken about the departure of Lorenzo Romar?
You know, I honestly think he's going to be great, exactly, as an assistant coach. So, yeah, we were a little bit heartbroken about that. He's going to really bolster the coaching staff there for Arizona. So, and I do think there's a Hopkins. I forget the last name of the coach they have there. They got for as an assistant from Syracuse. It's terrible. I should remember.
Yeah, but, Mike Hopkins.
Yeah, Mike Hopkins. He's going to – he'll make them better. He's going to do a better job coaching than Lorenzo Romar. Hopefully he'll be able to – hopefully not for Oregon, but hopefully for them, he'll be able to rope in the recruits that they need to get back in contention. But again, as a Duck fan, got to hope that we can suppress that from being a big issue.
Sorry, Tytel.
So I also wanted to know, they have all these internet videos where people will put on a shirt or a jersey and then take a photo, and then the next day they'll put on another one. What's the most you've ever worn at one time?
The most that I've put on at any single time? Oh, my goodness. I think it was like three. I put three or four on at once, but I don't think I've done more than that. I don't remember which three or four there were. I know that Rutgers was one of them, and I want to say that I think Valparaiso was the other one. I try. Some of them are super small, like the one from San Francisco, University of San Francisco, is a medium, so I can barely get that one over my head. One from Maryland is also like a 44 or a 46 size, whatever that it's basically a medium or large. And so it's kind of tough to put those ones outside of the other ones. And then there's some huge ones. I got one from Oral Roberts that's like goes down to below my knees. It's like a dress. It's great. So I think I've worn about four of them at once.
Is there a school that you really, really want that just hasn't gotten you one yet?
Oh, yeah, I've gotten a whole list, actually. I've got one from every single league. Dayton. I love Dayton. Butler. Michigan State. Michigan State says they're going to send one, but I haven't heard anything else from them. Obviously, Kansas, Kentucky. As far as the, you know, quote-unquote, littler conferences, you know, Harvard. I have Yale. I love Penn. I've reached out to Penn. But I've heard that they didn't have any of the time. So.
All right. Well, Tytel, you got to get back into this. Tytel also has a degree from Penn. So.
Oh, yeah?
I also don't have a jersey from Penn, so maybe I can relate. But no, I would I would not give up. They have the endowment. They can afford to get you a jersey. So
I would hope so. Like the opposite end of the spectrum from the beloved SWAC and the MEAC. Let's get the Ivy League.
Okay, so exactly. Dayton, Butler, Penn. Penn's going to be kind of hard. I could probably help you out with Dayton and Butler.
Yeah, Ball State, that'd be kind of cool.
2 years ago, I would have been able to get you one of those.
UNLV, that'd be awesome. Have Fairleigh Dickinson. I'd like Fairleigh Dickinson.
Chad, tonight. That's your
name. Yeah, that's my neck of the woods. I was up at one of their games just last year. So
And then I think I have Jacksonville State coming in from the Ohio Valley, and that will complete the Ohio Valley Conference, and they're on the way. So they'll be the second league of the 32 to come in. I got the WAC completed last week with Chicago State coming in.
That was going to be my guess for the last one, simply because I didn't think there would be anybody there to even answer the phone.
I know that was kind of my thoughts too. I kept thinking like, hey, you got those SWAC teams, and you got Chicago State's one of those ones that for 2 or 3 years now has been like debating whether or not to keep their athletic department open. So
or the school.
Yeah. Exactly. So, So again, maybe I got in. It's like in a web forum, you get in before the lock. I've gotten in before. Maybe it's gone. And kind of a piece of historical college basketball lore. Chicago State was actually a team at one point. Hopefully, they stay a team.
Yeah, I hope they do too.
In the Pac-12, Stanford, UCLA, that'd be great. Patriot League, Colgate. If nothing else, I want to be able to put Colgate and Oral Roberts next to each other. The battle of the mouths.
That's funny.
Well,
Brian, how did you become such a big college hoops fan? I mean, is this something you've always followed? Is it more recent?
I liked it in high school, but I didn't know how the tournament was structured very well, or what the leagues were. The fact that there were so many leagues and so many teams, most of you didn't hear about on TV. When I got into college, I was able to finally actually go to some of the Oregon games and kind of see what the atmosphere was like. And I had a friend there, his name was Pat, and he taught me. He was a Stanford fan, but he went to the University of Oregon because he didn't want to be so close to home in Palo Alto. So he was a Stanford fan, and he taught me kind of how everything worked, and how after every 4 minutes they would do a commercial break. Yeah, and that kind of stuff. And so from there, he's like, well, there's all these different leagues, and there's one team from every single one of the leagues that gets to go. And so I became just fascinated by that and thought to myself, well, why don't people talk about, the Patriot League or, the Northeast Conference? And so
we love
in doing that. Yeah, and in doing that, I just became obsessed. These smaller conference tournaments are so much more fun because only one team gets to go. The stakes feel so much higher there than in these, big, leagues. I was like, Louisville, too bad. They lost in the quarterfinals of the ACC tournament. They're still going to be a 5 seed or a 4 seed, something like that. Whereas, you have teams fighting to be a 16 seed, and that's, those coaches, they're probably moving on to, they're the ones that make it as the 16 seed. They're probably moving on to bigger, better things here in the next couple of years. And so, I feel like the emotion you see on that I saw in those smaller conferences and their schools is really what hammered it home for me and made me want to just become absolutely obsessed with it. And of course, my fraternity brothers marveled at my knowledge whenever they'd say a school that they never heard of. I'd be like, Monmouth, they're in the Metro Atlantic Conference. Cal Poly in the Big West, it's that kind of a stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, that's what did it for me. Just being able to follow every single one of the smaller leagues and bring it together. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. They're all part of the same net.
I tell you a few more questions.
Sure, I don't want to monopolize the whole discussion, but so I know that there's a $700 million Powerball winner somewhere out there tonight. So if somebody
I didn't realize somebody had won.
No, I assume that. I mean, it could be a billion next week. We'll see, but I'm predicting. Online, right. Which is always great. So if somebody is fortunate enough to win and wants to share the wealth, how can they get some money or jerseys to you to help your pursuit?
Well, I can give them my address. So that'd probably be the first way for them to get something to me. But in all seriousness, the best way for them to help me get my message out there is to find a way to help me get to as many games as possible all over the country. So, for example, we've got the PK80 here coming up in the next few next couple of months. It's at the end of November, and it's right after Thanksgiving. There's 16 teams, and yeah, they're big money teams that are going to be playing. So going to events like that and setting up some of the jerseys that I have, as well as being able to educate people on it, go to the games and cheer with the teams and mingle with the coaches and the players maybe a little bit, and some of the people involved with the schools, and figure out maybe some way with the NCAA to be able to just promote what I'm trying to the message I'm trying to send to people.
We make a phone call to Mark Emmert every now and then. Maybe we got to work on that, David.
Mark Emmert, even though he is a little doggy, he's a cool guy. He did great things for the NCAA.
Yeah, one of the things we were doing. Do you have one from Grand Canyon by chance?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. I would have been disappointed. Oh, good. He's going to get it. This is.
Yeah, the Lopes were one of our favorite teams here, not this past season, the season before. We had kind of adopted them.
Sharp. So one of the things we were trying to do was get Mark Emmert himself to grant the Lopes a waiver to allow them to play in the tournament, and we would occasionally call him from the show and leave him a message.
Right on. That's right, because they were
transitioning. Yeah,
transitioning from that makes sense. And so this year, honestly, Grand Canyon, I especially with Casey Benson, they're going to be at top of WAC. I'd be surprised.
Right, and I know it's the WAC, but with Grand Canyon, New Mexico State, and another school, Cal Baptist, who is a D2 power. At least the top of the WAC is going to be, and then Bakersfield, another school.
Yeah, Bakersfield, and honestly, I think you'll see Utah Valley get better too. I know that people don't think they're much of anything, but a third, fourth place team in Utah Valley, I feel like you never know, they could bolster the league a little bit.
Seattle's got the chance there to get better. I think they've got the infrastructure there at least to.
Yeah.
Oh, they should, absolutely. I mean, these are schools that have some, like you said, have endowment and some money.
Yeah, so can we pull out Seattle? Seattle's one of those teams that the way they dress, you can see them from outer space. It's like the red and the black shorts. It's just, you clearly want to be seen from very far away.
Oh, yeah. Can be pretty striking. It's a very bright red.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, this was actually one of the first ones. I think it may have been the first WAC school that I reached out to.
Well, because the WAC, they stream their games, and when Seattle's playing, it's coming through that computer stream, and it's like, oh my God, like it's just the on that white court.
You don't have any other teams. So I'm trying to think of any other teams in the WAC that have that like red a scheme. You got Chicago State's green, Grand Canyon's purple, Rio Grande Valley is orange. So I mean, you got a lot of different. I don't think you have any other red. New Mexico State's got some red, but they like to use. I feel like they go with black primarily for their.
Yeah. So what have been? Because I mean, I guess like throughout this whole process, you've had some. You had to have had some pretty positive and meaningful interactions. What are some, and it might be such a loaded question that it's hard to answer, but what are some of the more memorable ones or storied ones?
Probably Stephen F. Austin. Their coach, Kyle Keller, he had epilepsy. He doesn't experience symptoms anymore, but he sent me a really nice note. And Jersey, this is a shoe from signed by Thomas Walkup.
Wow.
If you get to remember him. He plays for the Windy City Bulls. I feel like them and Houston Baptist, two schools out of the Southland Conference. Was it athletic director Luke Hillen at Houston Baptist has a family member that also deals with epilepsy. So both of those two, I feel like, were among the most meaningful because they're messages that they sent back and interactions that I've had with them on Twitter, I feel like have been kind of the most personal to me. And I've been able to just kind of treat their schools as just kind of like a friend. It's really amazing.
That's great. Those are a couple of our favorite schools here, actually.
Houston
Baptist wears these throwback uniforms. Did they send you the throwback?
Let's pull out. Did they send you the retro one or whatever it was they were wearing that with the stripes on it?
It's these throwback uniforms they wear a couple times a year. They are just they're incredible to see. There they are. That is it.
Oh my God! They sent you those. The throwback. Yes. That is amazing. They didn't send you the shorts with it, did they?
They are. You know what? They're not difficult to find. But yeah. I've got these, like, 12 totes or so.
Yeah.
There they are.
Oh, there they are. Yes. Now, see, that would have been better than Rutgers.
Well, I mean, it is. You know what? I want to see Houston Baptist play Rutgers. That'd be a good matchup.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than they're a little better than the teams Rutgers typically plays out of conference. Houston Baptist, as a transitional team, was actually one of the better teams in the Southland. Not last year, but the year before. Didn't they start off like 8-0 or something? You remember that, Chan? We were talking about them every week.
Yeah, but
I mean, they've got a lot of winnable games this year too. I mean, Stephen F. Austin will be good, but.
Yeah,
I honestly think there's no reason why Houston Baptist can't be a contender for the Southland title. I mean, this is going to be a very big year for them. And
yeah.
Coach Key, he does a great job. So it'll be interesting to see. I'd love to see Houston Baptist get a better arena because I feel like 800, 900-person arena. The only one smaller than theirs is the one at South Carolina Upstate, which is like 800 people.
What about Charleston Southern?
Southern is a tiny one.
Charleston
had been tiny, but won't be anymore. Yeah,
Houston Baptist. I've never seen their arena on television, just on the internet streams. Probably because, if they've ever been on TV, I missed it that night. But it is it is conspicuously small. It is small. I don't even think they have seats. It's just high rise. Right. It's just a riser, isn't it?
Yeah, they're like, again, I don't want to sound rude, they're like high school gyms.
Yeah.
It's kind of what they're like, a rec center gyms, because, I mean, that's the space the universities have. There's there's so much money to be made in D1, even just by going and playing at Kentucky, at Arizona, at Syracuse, at Michigan State. I mean, there's so much the big paychecks. Those schools can't say no to that. And then, there's not going to be the incentive for South Carolina Upstate to be able to sell more than 800 tickets to a game because South Carolina Upstate is just not going to be able to get the fans to go there. As much as I want to go and be able to catch a game at those places, because I feel like the atmosphere for a D1 game in both Houston Baptist and South Carolina Upstate would just be so surreal to
me. Yeah.
This is like almost like weird empty feeling, even though like there's still people there. It's just this odd like.
Yeah, well, it's real compact because I remember when Houston Baptist was playing. I think it was Stephen F. Austin, and it must have been the year before last. It was a home game for them, and I mean, it was both teams were undefeated or close to it at the time, and that gym. It was small. There weren't a lot of people there, but it was full. And it was just a really, really unique atmospheric game to watch.
It's thrilling. And you see that other leagues, too, like the Ohio Valley Conference. You get, Murray State playing, like, Belmont. And those are really, like, the people that go to those games. I mean, they're passionate. You wouldn't know that you weren't, watching, Xavier or one of those other teams that has, that has a fan base that's also raucous. So, I mean, you got great fan bases that all over the country for some of these teams that are considered smaller. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Brian, let me throw another question out at you here. We all love college basketball, but is there something about college basketball that you don't like on the court, off the court? Is there a rule that you would change if you were running things?
Honestly, I think the thing may not be a rule change. The thing that upsets me more than anything else, and I'm sure everybody has complaints like this in their own leagues, with the Pac-12, been notoriously some of the worst officiating in all of college sports, not just college basketball, but college football as well. But for example, when Oregon would go play at UCLA, there's times where you get a player that's driving the lane, taking the ball to the hoop, and the ref puts his arms up for a foul before even any contact or anything's initiated. Basically, like, I'm going to call a foul, and okay, here it is, even though maybe it wasn't there. Again, it may be just confirmation bias on my part, but I feel like sometimes there's this effort to maybe go out of the way to be able to not piss off the home crowd. I know people call it home cooking, but it's a subconscious sort of thing. Rule changes. I know some people have thought about maybe going to the quarter.
No, we don't want that at all.
You stole my thunder for my next question. I was going to ask if you're in support or not, because David loves it so much.
Because there's nothing I need to know more than NIT this last year.
And it was just an absolute joke.
Yeah. It's like, here's how much time is left until the half is half over.
Right. I would also like to see the tournament expand. I know a lot of people don't, but I'm fine with it expanding all the way to 96, because then
really,
the reason being, and it, first off, there's a lot of money to be made with it. But second off, as much as I don't like sounding mean, you weed out like Jackson State or Maryland Eastern Shore before, you know, those teams are just going to get obliterated by whoever they play anyway. So why, you know, not just have them play like a 9 seed instead of a 1 seed. And then the 16 seed is still, you know, maybe a decent mid-major, maybe a mid-major. You could do it to where like the conference champion in the regular season gets a bid, as well as the team that wins the conference tournament, so that you don't just overload it with power conference teams. Right. You know,
I kind of like it where it is, but if it were to go to 96, that would be the format I would prefer, would be right. 2 bids per conference. Mm-hmm. And the bubble stays relatively the same.
Yep, and in the process, do away with the NIT completely.
Yeah.
There's no NIT. You don't make the tournament, too bad. That's it. You had next season. You got 96 teams in here. If you didn't make it, well, you should have played better. And that's my thought process. The NIT is such a joke anyway. Why not just – you know, there's more teams involved. There's, you know, bigger name schools as well. So I feel like it's a no-brainer for the NCAA to try to push for it. And these schools make so much more money. You know, it's always just a money grab because it's popular. And live sports, you know, is basically the best way for advertisers to be able to force people's eyeballs onto what they want them to see.
Well, I guess I'm not – I mean, when it comes down to it, though, if they expand to 96 – it's not going to be to add in a second SWAC team and a second Northeast Conference team. It's going to be to give, you know, 30 more teams that were four or five games under 500 in their conference in the ACC bids. And we got enough of those already. You're kind of cheering me along there.
There is a problem. I agree with you. You don't want to get 2 SWAC teams or 2 MEAC teams or 2 Northeast Conference teams or what have you in there, because – yeah, they're just the matchups. Vegas wouldn't even set lines for the games they play. I remember, was it Norfolk State beating Missouri a few years ago? I was like, how the hell did that happen? Like,
well, Frank Haith was coaching Missouri.
I thought Hampton beating Iowa State in 2001 was the last time I'd ever seen HBCU ever win a tournament game. And then Norfolk State did it a few years ago. So, yeah, I don't know if I'll ever see a SWAC team win a game. I don't know how long it's been. I'm trying to remember any of them.
It's Southern over Georgia Tech, I think.
Southern beat Georgia Tech a while back. Other than that, I mean, I think they've won.
That was 20-plus years ago. I think that's the only game they've won, the SWAC. I could be wrong. In the round of 64, I know they've probably won some opening round games or first 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
But, a few years ago, when Gonzaga was a 1 seed, I forget the year, but it was the year Wichita knocked them out and went to the Final 4.
Yeah.
I think Southern had a lead in the second half. And that's the last time I recall a team from
was it Gonzaga?
And that's the last time I recall a SWAC team leading in the second half of a game in the round of 64.
I think maybe my best memory, or worst memory for a SWAC fan, if there are, you know, very few of them, Mississippi Valley State against UCLA was in 2008 with Kevin Love. I think I want to say UCLA won that game like 105 to like 29 or something.
It was about that, yeah.
This is the reason why, you know, you've got to find a way to weed these teams out before you get to the round of 64, I feel like. But again, there's just a lot of money to be made. But at the same time, yeah, you don't want to have 2 teams from these bottom feeder leagues getting in. So there's got to be some sort of system to where, you know, maybe your RPI number has to be a certain – I have no idea. Figure out some sort of system to where, you know, you've got to have a certain strength of schedule or something to be able to be a second team from that league.
That's pretty interesting that you got to be above a certain cutoff to get a bid, and then you
and can. maybe it's some sort of composite metric scale that you can use. Maybe not like Sagarin's or KenPom's or whoever, what have you. You have somebody that you have some sort of matrix, bracket matrix, what have you, that you can say, okay, like if you're below like the 200s in RPI and you didn't win your conference regular season. You won your regular season title, but you didn't win your conference tournament. Yeah, you're not going to do that. Something like that.
Well, we've had this debate actually a lot on our show here is whether, we love conference tournaments because of the excitement of it, everybody playing for one spot. But do you think that they're kind of unfair because you could have a team like Texas Southern run away with a SWAC and then get upset in the finals of the conference tournament and you get to go and play an IT game?
Right, exactly. And then you end up with, Jackson State or some other school that gets in there because they had a fluky win against Texas Southern, for example. So, or in the Northeast Conference, maybe Fairleigh Dickinson is the best, and then you have, St. Francis College ends up, stealing the title somehow. So, in those situations, you kind of think, well, it would have been nicer, and, maybe Texas Southern would have been a much more formidable opponent, then of course Jackson State or what have you. So that's kind of the thought process and the dichotomy there is, you run the risk of putting two of these teams in those leagues into the tournament, but you also get the school that's probably the best one over the course of the season.
It's always a debate we kind of have because, intellectually I do like the idea of the best team being in, but I just love conference tournament play.
That's why I love the Ivy League's done it great in that they only, the regular season, you got to get to the tournament. You got to only half the schools make it for a four team playoff. And so maybe if you did that for the smaller leagues, I know it's kind of like, well, there's cash grabs and there's all put as many teams in there as you can, but maybe for the Northeast Conference, you just say, well, we're going to cut it at, four teams or eight teams. And that way, Horizon League almost was a disaster last year. You almost had, Milwaukee, who was the dead last 10th team, somehow almost win. If they'd beaten Northern Kentucky, they would have, Joe Lenardi said, I hope they like Dayton.
They get to go from Milwaukee to Dayton.
I know. It's a great vacation.
Yeah. Well, the thing, I used to love the Horizon League tournament. It was my favorite format because all the teams were in it, but the top two basically bought into the semifinals, and it was at campus sites. And you had great atmospheres. There was a lot of excitement during the season because who's going to get the double bye? Who's going to get home court advantage? Mm-hmm. And it was such a great thing that they decided, well, what is a good way to get rid of this great thing? And they did. They just went to a single tournament format. I hate what they've done with it.
Yep.
The ASUN campus sites, Northeast Conference, we talked about that, campus sites. Big South finally did it right, went to campus sites. What drives me up the wall is the Horizon League, the SWAC, the MEAC. They do nothing to protect their first place team, and that is just, in my opinion, categorically unfair and impractical. Because why wouldn't you want to help the best team get to the tournament?
Well, the West Coast Conference, I think they do the same thing. They have Gonzaga and St. Mary's get the byes into the protected rounds. It's ridiculous. You don't see that. Even if you have eight teams, it's like, well, then still figure out a way to get those two big teams basically automatically in the semifinals. Because it's silly to run the risk of them slipping up. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Brian, with us back to the jerseys here. You've got some non D1s also as well. You've got not just the D1 jerseys coming in, right?
I do. I have the most recent one I posted was Montana State Billings Yellow Jackets, which is another kind of funny thing because they are a conference rival here in D2 to Western Oregon University. And so Western Oregon will go down and play the Ducks almost every year these days, at D2 versus D1 game. And so their coach, Coach Schmidt, wanted me to, it said, go ahead and come to the game this next year here in Monmouth and wear the Yellow Jackets jersey. And so maybe that'll give the Wolves a little bit of incentive to send something over. It's a real long real long way they'd have to send it. So
let me ask you this. Are you going to have to change your Twitter handle next year when we've got Cal Baptist and North Alabama both joining D1? Yeah. You've got to be a couple more schools.
We lose Savannah State. They're dropping.
I forgot about that.
D1 for God. So it's going to be 352. Yeah.
No, it will be 352. You got Cal Baptist coming in. You have Cal San Diego. UCSD, the Tritons, they are going to join A-League. I don't know whether they're joining the Big West or the WAC.
Yeah, my understanding is that they haven't gotten the league invite yet, and as soon as they do, they're moving up, but you're not allowed to move up without an invite anymore. So that.
For some reason, I thought the WAC or the Big West had already extended the invitation, and the North Alabama will be joining the Atlantic Sun next season as well. So there will be at least 352. So, yes, I will change that. I thought, about it, if one day expanding this, especially as I get closer and closer to finishing all 350, just expanding this to be, NCAA jerseys for Hope with football jerseys and such too. So, or just jerseys for Hope in general, just trying to raise awareness for epilepsy through any ways necessary, D3s, NAIAs, however I can reach as many people as possible with these schools.
All right. Tytel, anything else you got for tonight? Let me throw to each of you here.
I'm still focused on expanding the 96. I'm trying to come down off that. As the son of a neurologist, I'm well aware of the problems with epilepsy and all other kinds of neurological and neuromuscular diseases. So I commend you on your battle against it as well as raising awareness. And I can tell that you're not just in it for the free jersey. Like, your knowledge of college basketball is fantastic. So I'm glad that you took the time to come on tonight and share some stories about basketball and other stuff.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Again, thank you guys so much. And yeah, that's one of the coolest things when I went to OHSU and the nurses came in and they're like, well, I'm an alum of Fresno State, or I went to Valparaiso. So, I had those jerseys in the pictures to be able to show them, and they were just, amazed at my thought to kind of bring it all together. Because there's so many people that go to these schools, even the ones that don't have big medical schools, they move on through nursing or other pre-med programs. They move on to, either nursing or becoming a neurologist or a neuroscientist themselves. So yeah, all these schools, even the little ones, they do something. They send people on to life-saving careers.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, I obviously don't suffer from epilepsy, but I know some people that do, and I know some people within the sport that do, players and some assistant coaches. And I think that more than you realize, Brian, just even though they don't know you, they still feel a connection to you. And I think it gives them a good feeling about what you're doing, that it makes them feel like, oh, they're not alone. And it actually does more. It does more good than maybe what you realize. I mean, I know it's good to get jerseys out of it, but I think it's something that anyone that watches college basketball and that is going what you're going through takes a lot of inspiration from. So that is – it's really good you're doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of familiar with the Ohio Valley. You said you've gotten all of their jerseys. I can – and it makes sense why, knowing what I know about that league. I don't know – we didn't get into those specifically, but – I think that there's some people that suffer from epilepsy as well, and not just there, it's everywhere. Like you said, it's one out of 25 Americans, I think, that suffer from it.
So, exactly. Yep. Yeah. The main thing is just helping people not feel alone, that, there's somebody, somebody deals with it or has dealt with it in the past. And so bringing awareness to that, to something that so many people really do suffer from, and it doesn't really get talked about a whole lot. So I feel like people being able to share their stories of what they deal with is really important.
Well, again, thanks for joining us tonight, Brian. Please make sure you do follow him at 350 Jerseys for Hope on Twitter. Take a look at all the pictures that he's got of the jerseys and the fight against epilepsy. It's a great, great cause. But on behalf of David Griggs, John Tytel, Brian, again, thanks for joining us. I'm Chad Sherwood, and wish everybody a great night.
All right.
Thanks.